Rick Stevens, financial advisor with FRS Financial Group, offers securities and investment advisory services through Waddell & Reed Incorporated, a broker-dealer, member FINRA and SIPC, and a federally registered investment advisor. FRS Financial Group is a separate entity from Waddell & Reed. Insurance products are offered through insurance companies with which Waddell & Reed has sales arrangements. The information presented on this show is solely for information purposes and is not to be construed as an offer to sell or the solicitation of an offer to buy any financial product or service mentioned. Waddell & Reed does not offer tax or legal advice. Please consult with a professional prior to making any financial decisions. Any opinions expressed are those of Rick Stevens and may not be the opinions of Waddell & Reed. The information is subject to change based on market and other conditions. For more detailed information regarding any of the topics discussed on today's show, please call 719-500-8700. This is Money Matters, presented by FRS Financial.
Welcome to Money Matters, presented by FRS Financial Group. I'm your host, Andrew Rogers. Rick Stevens is out today. This show is all about you and your money because you're money matters. And if you've got a question or something you'd like to have covered in a future show, feel free to give Rick a call, 719-500-8700, or shoot him an email at rstevens@frsfinancialgroup.com. You can also head on over to frsfinancialgroup.com, click on Contact Us in the top corner. That will get to Rick as well. But thank you for listening here to Money Matters. We've got Ben Fisk of Fisk Lawnscapes joining us today talking about your landscaping. Obviously, it's that time of year to put a little bit more thought into what's going on out around the house. And Ben, thank you for joining us here on Money Matters.
Andrew, it's good to be back in studio with you today, and thanks for having me.
Absolutely. You know, we're approaching the fall months. We had the unofficial end of summer this past week with Labor Day. We can't wear our white pants anymore after Labor Day. But maybe you're thinking about some fall projects. Maybe you've still got a little bit of time to get that work done. What should we be thinking about when it comes to our landscape efforts?
Absolutely. Well, fall is a great time to get out and enjoy your landscape. And so if you go out into your backyard or perhaps you drive into your front yard and you no longer love your yard, maybe now is a great time to start thinking about some of those projects that you want to tackle this fall. Maybe you want to spruce up some of your plantings, maybe you want to remulch, or maybe you want to start thinking about maybe a larger landscaping project.
Yeah, and what are some of the more sustainable ways to kind of work on that this fall, knowing that inevitably the cold is going to come probably in a month, maybe a month and a half?
Sure, absolutely. You know, fall is one of my favorite times to landscape because we're going to still get a period of really nice weather here in Colorado Springs. And so, you know, we can look at things like planting. Planting is a great thing that we can do over the next couple of weeks. So maybe you want to go down to your local nursery, pick up some trees, pick up some shrubs, and go ahead and get those in the ground. It will be really important to keep watering those shrubs and trees while we're still in the growing season before things go into dormancy, because we do have a couple of months left before things will transition and go into that dormant state. And so you want to be thinking about some things like that. Or perhaps, you know, you want to go out in your yard and you want to work on your yard a little bit. Maybe go out and do some raking, do some mowing, do some different things to kind of prepare your yard as we head into the fall season. So, you know, a couple things you can look at doing here as we come into the fall for your yard is get that fall aeration scheduled. And what aeration is going to do is it's going to allow nutrients and oxygen and water to get down into the roots of your grass. So that's going to really be beneficial for your grass as we move into the fall, winter timeframe. Also put down a fertilizer. And then, like I had mentioned, you can do a little bit of raking. Maybe you have some areas that are a little bit thin in your yard. Now is a great time to do some top dressing. And that's going to be maybe a couple of bags of a nice planter's mix, a nice topsoil. You're going to spread that only at about a quarter inch thick and then put down some grass seed and kind of rake, give that a gentle rake in those areas that are struggling a little bit, and then make sure to water, 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 as it is pretty dry out there right now.
And when you talk about raking, I know there's also that debate over power raking as well. Maybe you've got
the
some
power
areas,
raking debate.
Yeah, maybe you've got some areas that are thicker than other parts of the lawn. How do you deal with kind of those, you know, some of the maybe overly thick parts of the lawn as well?
Yeah, so power raking is really exists to remove dead thatch from your yard. If you don't have a lot of dead thatch, you definitely don't need to power rake. Most of the time, the only times that we really recommend power raking is if you have a yard that's just loaded with thatch. in which case you can get a power raker or hire a company to come and power rake your yard. A better solution to that problem is going to be to not over-fertilize. The reason you get thatch in your yard is because you're actually putting down too much fertilizer throughout the course of the season, which is why we always recommend it's better to under-fertilize versus over-fertilize. And you're also better off fertilizing a little bit more frequently and not as heavy to really reduce some of that thatch for the health of your yard. Now, aeration also helps with that thatching problem. And so if you have a little bit of thatch or some areas that are just a little bit thick and have some of that thatch, when you aerate, just go over that 2, 3, 4 times. And that will really help reduce that thatch in your yard. So I'm not a huge fan of power raking unless you have real specific circumstances going on in your yard.
Yeah, and you know, when it comes to fertilizing, I heard a long time ago, and correct me if this is kind of old standing, you know, practice, but to do it on like the major holidays, your Memorial Day, 4th, and Labor Day, is that still true or should it be a little bit different depending?
You know, that's a great rule of thumb. And if that helps you remember, absolutely go, you know, go off of that. You know, we do recommend every 6 to 8 weeks is when you want to put down fertilizer. So if you look at the major holidays, that works pretty closely to that schedule. And it's just a good idea to help, you know, do that several times, you know, 4, 5, 6 times throughout the course of the season, every 6 to 8 weeks.
And, you know, Ben, obviously, when you're talking about putting down the fertilizer, you know, I know for myself, I walk into local hardware store or that big box store, and just the options are endless. So what should we be looking for when it comes to that fertilizer, especially now that we're getting in towards the tail end of the season and maybe to set our lawn up for a great dormancy?
Great question, because there are a lot of options and choices out there. What you're looking for is a fall-type fertilizer as we go into this time of the year. What you don't want to put down is something that's designed for spring or for summer, because what is in those fertilizers is going to be the wrong thing for your yard at the wrong time of the year. So as we go into this time of the year, we want to look at something that's going to really encourage the root growth of the turf grass, and not something that's going to push high, you know, with the leaf color, the green, anything like that. So we're looking for something that maybe says on the package fall or winter, something of that nature. What you don't want to do is be like, oh, hey, I've got this leftover bag from the spring in my garage, and I'm going to throw that down, because that's actually the wrong balance. It's going to have too much nitrogen, and nitrogen is really going to basically encourage a lot of leaf growth, which you don't want to encourage this time of year. You actually want to take those nutrients and get them down into the roots of the grass, which will help your grass come next spring.
And when you talk about just finding that extra bag hanging out in the garage, how long do those last? Because I know I've got a couple from, you know, last year. I mean, how long is that going to go and be good for my lawn instead of having to go out and constantly rebuy?
Sure. Yeah. So typically we recommend buying smaller bags versus larger bags for that reason. You know, but if you have some in your yard from this spring, you could still use it again next spring and be okay. You know, we don't recommend keeping it much longer than that kind of year and a half type range. So maybe if you have some extra, you could bless your neighbor with some or help out somebody else.
Absolutely. You know, one thing, you know, we constantly hear about in this summer, we were lucky that we had a lot of rain, but still every year we're talking about water issues. I know Colorado Springs Utilities here in the Colorado Springs area, very big as far as watering rules, using the water more efficiently as well. And has that led to an increase of people maybe taking a look at what they've currently had and finding a way to maybe make it a little bit more water friendly, or even going all the way to a zeroscape?
Absolutely. Yeah. Water is a big deal in our community, as you know, we've talked about before and as we hear on a regular basis. And while in August we had quite a bit of precipitation, as we're now moving into the fall, it's really starting to dry out. But then there's also kind of just that larger view of water, maybe in 1 year, 5 years, 10 years down the road. What's that water situation going to look like here in our community? And we want to be good stewards of this water. And so there's a lot of different things that you can do. You know, we can look at xeriscaping, like you mentioned. We can look at artificial turf. We can look at reducing the overall amount of sod, grass, that you have in your yard. So there's a lot of things, and we have this conversation with clients all the time, a lot of things that you can do in your yard to reduce your water usage.
Yeah, and when it comes to reducing that water usage, is there other ways to, you know, maybe look at what you currently have and, you know, almost grandfather in some ideas to make it more efficient without having a complete, you know, ground up rebuild of the lawn?
Yeah, it really depends on each of the specific client's yard to really answer that question effectively. But, you know, we can look at things like an irrigation retrofit versus like an irrigation, you know, rebuild the whole thing. And a retrofit might just mean, hey, we're going to install some more water efficient heads that are going to do a better job of conserving water, and they're not going to bleed out all over the sidewalk and waste water every time they run. They're going to have a check valve in them, as an example. So there's a lot of things you can do with your irrigation system to kind of help with that. And then, you know, maybe just reducing your sod area would be kind of in that category of not taking off a huge chunk, but might just reduce your water by 50% or something like that.
Yeah, when, you know, we're talking about maybe reducing the sod, what are some great things that you've seen, you've worked with clients that have kind of been that replacement for the sod to come in, still have that great aesthetic view, but, you know, reduce that overall grass footprint?
Absolutely. So this is where, you know, we can start talking about xeriscaping a little bit. And as you're looking at planning your fall projects, give xeriscape some thought. And so really what xeriscape is going to do is going to reduce your sod usage, and it's going to incorporate things like some rock areas, some planted areas, some mulched berms, perhaps some boulders. Dry creek beds is one of my favorite. You know, if you have kind of a typical Colorado Springs front yard that's 30 by 30 or something like that, you could take a creek bed and kind of run it down, meandering through the front yard, starting up by your front porch and kind of ending up down at the lower corner of your front yard. And then maybe on either side of that, you could have a couple of berms with trees and plants and some rocks placed in there, some boulders, 2, 3, 4 foot boulders. You could do some nice Colorado moss rocks, maybe some blue spruces or some other types of trees, Austrian pines, or maybe some pinyon pines, depending, again, on the size of your yard and what we're trying to accomplish. Ornamental grasses are a great option on either side of that creek bed as it meanders down through your front yard. So lots of options when it comes to xeriscape. You know, xeriscape, Andrew, is not just we're going to scrape out all the grass and we're going to lay down rock. A lot of people think that's what xeriscaping is, and it's so much more than that.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's not what, you know, your grandfather's xeriscaping, but with a lot of the new areas, you know, you add in more rock. Even like I know myself, I've still got a heavy amount of rock kind of around the lawn. That also deals with that weed issue. And is there really anything to help kind of permanently get rid of those, especially small ground cover weeds or those from popping up in the rocks? Because it seems like they put down the paper, but that only, you know, kind of lasts the day it was installed.
Yeah, weeds are always an issue. So definitely start with a good weed barrier fabric. And so there's some different options out there when it comes to weed barrier fabric. So you want to use a higher quality, which is going to cost a little bit more, weed barrier fabric. So get that down. And then, you know, when you put your rock in, you're going to try to install that as clean as possible. So keep in dirt and sediment out of that the best that you can, even though when you get that rock from a local rock yard, it's going to have some sediments in it. And then really the best tip or trick that I can give you is just stay on top of it. The more that you stay on top of the weeds, the less they'll have opportunity to reseed and then create a bigger problem for you next year. So you can do some manual pulling. You can do some spraying. Some of those things can help. But really, if you just take a little bit of time every weekend and stay on it, that's going to be your best bet.
So is there like a product that's available on the consumer level that I know some like the bigger cities, you know, say like, you know, Phoenix, LA, that they have just that massive spray on all their rocks to try and really, you know, go at it hardcore? Is there something available like that to make it a little bit easier to kind of keep on top of?
Yeah, most people know the Roundup name, but something kind of like a Roundup that you could purchase at a local hardware store is going to be your best bet. We use some different products on the commercial side, but just kind of for your typical homeowner, I would recommend going into, Ace, a Lowe's, Home Depot, and purchasing just a good weed kill type spray. And again, if you keep some of that in your garage and you only have a couple of weeds here and there, you can really stay on top of this weed problem. Again, oftentimes we see issues with weeds because people don't address it for weeks, months, seasons, and then all of a sudden you look out one day and you've got weeds everywhere.
So you correct me if I misheard you, but you're saying maybe keep that Roundup and do some spot treatment, or should you go ahead and just like clear cover, spray all your rock just to be more preventative?
Yeah, you know, really spot spraying is going to be your best bet to go ahead and spray those weeds. Some products like a Roundup are only going to work when it's on an actual plant. So that's not going to be a blanket spray. So you don't want to use that as a blanket spray. That's not going to be good for our environment. That's really just going to be on weeds as they pop up. So I really do advocate for more of a spot spray and staying on top of it. And that way your weeds don't get out of control.
All right, we're talking with Ben Fisk of Fisk Lawnscapes. There's a lot to be thinking about when it comes to your landscaping. We're going to continue this conversation after this right here on Money Matters presented by FRS Financial Group.
Money affects each of us in different ways. Sometimes it's a source of stress and fear. Sometimes it's a source of comfort and security. Whatever your perspective, it's always good to get a second set of eyes on your finances to help serve as a guide. If you are looking for that guidance, call FRS Financial Group at 719-500-8700 to schedule your complimentary appointment. And remember to tune into Money Matters presented by FRS Financial Group here on KRDO, Saturday mornings at 9 and Sunday mornings at 10. Products and services offered through LPL Financial, member FINRA, SIPC.
Welcome back to Money Matters, presented by FRS Financial Group. I'm Andrew Rogers. Rick Stevens is out today, but this, of course, is Money Matters. We've been talking with Ben Fisk of Fisk Lawnscapes, talking about all things landscaping. We hit on it a little bit during the first section, but let's talk a lot about water this go-around. So when it comes to watering, I know we're kind of getting into that time where the seasons are shifting again. What should we be looking at currently when it comes to properly running that irrigation system?
Yeah, a lot of people hit kind of this September time frame and they forget to water, but it is still hot and dry. So really, really important that you're still watering your trees, your shrubs, your grass. Stuff is still growing, and especially when we're in these 80s and almost 90 or 90 degree temperatures, we absolutely need to continue to remember to water our landscape. And so, you know, we may not have quite as much evaporation going on because the days are shorter, but that doesn't mean that we can just turn off our irrigation just yet throughout this month of September. It's going to be important to keep watering. So, you know, at least a couple of times a week on those shrubs and perennials, a couple times a week on your grass and, you know, your trees. If they're a new tree, you're going to be wanting to water them, you know, three or four times throughout the week. If they're an established tree, once a week, deep water is going to be great.
And is that something, too, where you could maybe, say, have that drip irrigation set up and have the trees and shrubs on the same schedule, or is that something you need to really be looking in more individual?
Absolutely. Well, it just is going to be dependent on how your system is set up, but huge advocate for drip systems. Really efficient way to water. Gets water right to where the water needs to go for these plants and shrubs. And so if everything is on the same drip system, not a big deal. You can get that set up and you can, you know, do some things with the different emitters. And emitters is basically what is popped into the drip line. You have a half inch or a three quarter inch drip line, and that's the drip emitter is actually what waters onto those trees or plants. And so if you have that drip system, absolutely take advantage of that. And that will save you a lot of time and a lot of money from just an irrigation perspective, because you don't lose that much to evaporation with these drip systems. And so let's just say, for example, you have an established yard here in Colorado Springs. The stuff has been in 4, 5, 6 years. People may ask, hey, how long do I need to set up my drip system for? And every drip system is different. So just maybe some general guidelines that we would be looking at is, you know, we want to be getting about 60 minutes of water onto those trees and shrubs throughout the course of that week. And so maybe two times at 30 minutes, or if everything is really established and you've got more of the tree type side of things, then you could go one time at 60 minutes.
Okay, and then, you know, we talked about kind of this September being a little bit that misnomer that people think it's time just to shut it off, but yet there's still a lot of hot days, a lot of evaporation. When it comes to that overall watering length, should we be doing it maybe a little bit less still than in August, the same amount, or maybe even a little bit more to help get that deep root build?
Yeah, that's a great question that we get often. So in the months of July and August, those are going to be kind of your highest evaporation rate months. And so those are the months that we're going to see, especially the month of July. That's going to be the month that your landscape needs the most water. And then kind of on either side of that, it's going to decrease. And then either side of that, it's going to decrease again. And so kind of one way to look at it is the months of May and September are going to be kind of similar in terms of your water needs. But, you know, one other thing to touch on here too, Andrew, is that your plants, your shrubs, your perennials, your trees, your grass, if you pay attention, it will tell you if it needs more water or not. Grass, for example, it's going to start turning kind of a silvery color. Most people know what that looks like when your grass is stressed, or if you walk across it and your footprint stays and it kind of has a little bit of a different silvery color to it, that means your grass is a little bit dry. Certainly, if it starts turning brown, you realize it's really dry in those particular areas. Or if you walk across it and it's like squish, 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 really, really wet, then you know you're overwatering it. The same is going to be true with your perennials. You know, if they are a nice, vibrant bloom, they're probably in a really happy place, which means they're getting the right amount of water, the right amount of sun, the right amount of nutrients. But if you have some plants that are just kind of struggling a little bit, they're not growing kind of the way that they have in years past, oftentimes it's going to be because you're either overwatering them or underwatering them. And so just pay attention to your landscape, and you will kind of figure out, be able to dial in. Every landscape is different. Soil type is a huge thing, whether you have sand or clay. So pay attention to your yard, and it will kind of tell you what it needs in terms of water.
Yeah, and when we talk about some of that overwatering, you know, you mentioned that squishiness. Is that just kind of the day of, like, say your water day is still a little squishy, or is that kind of day or so after? Well, I mean, when should we be looking at that?
Yeah, for the most part, your yard should not be squishy. If it's squishy, you're overwatering it, and unless you have a really high clay base, in which case, if you have the high clay base, definitely you want to aerate at least twice a year. That will help the water get down to those roots. So if you have a clay base and it's a little squishy right after you water, that's okay because it will percolate. It will, you know, go into the ground. But other than that, if you have a sandy base or a loam and you're walking across it and you're kind of getting that squish, definitely a good sign to turn the water down. Or perhaps you have an irrigation leak or you have a busted head right in that one particular area. So let's say most of your yard looks really, really nice, but you have one area that always seems to kind of have that squish going on. Very possibly could be an irrigation leak, or it could be a head that's not functioning properly, or it could be a busted head.
Okay, now I'll use my yard as an example. I've got one spot that's kind of shaded, covered with an overhang from our patio. It seems to definitely hold the water a little bit more and has a little bit of some mushrooms kind of joining us. But yet the rest of the lawn, very out in the open, very easily to get sun. What should I do as far as that, or, you know, find ways to maybe cut down on those mushrooms, especially with young kids around and making sure that they're not, you know, getting into something potentially dangerous?
Mm-hmm, definitely, yeah. So if you're getting some mushroom growth, there's a couple reasons for that. First thing to look at certainly is water. And so if you have different zones in your backyard, mm-hmm. you could take the zone that's closest to the house and turn that down. Turn it down significantly, maybe half of what you're doing now, and see if that helps correct the problem without stressing the grass out too much.
Okay.
Second thing to look at is to swap your irrigation nozzles. So let's say everything's on the same zone and you have one part of the yard that looks good and you have mm-hmm. one part of the yard that's shaded and is growing mushrooms, but they all water on the same irrigation zone. Then take those heads that are, in your case, closest to the house, swap out those nozzles to a lower gallon per minute nozzle. So you'll reduce, if you can reduce by half or even by a quarter, what that output of those heads are, that may correct your problem as well.
Absolutely. And then when we're talking about the irrigation, I know technology is always coming along. You know, there's now the kind of smart irrigation systems that will maybe skip if it's raining, kind of take some of those seasonal things up on for you. Is that something you've worked with a lot? Is that something you recommend to have people maybe adopt?
Yeah, smart irrigation controllers are great. And, having the app on your phone can be really helpful as well. So let's say you travel all the time and we get a bunch of rain like we did in August. Mm-hmm. You can use the app from your phone and you can actually just turn off your irrigation because your yard didn't need it a whole lot in August with all the rain that we got. And so highly recommend at least a Wi-Fi controller. This is where you can get, an app, a Hunter app or Rainbird app, that type of thing onto your phone so that you can manually kind of adjust right there from your phone. You don't have to go into your basement or into your garage to change everything on the controller. You know, we see pretty frequently people set it and forget it for the whole year. And it's like, no, because your water needs do change, just like we were talking about from May through June to July and into now September, your watering needs are going to change. So that way you can dial all those zones in specifically straight from your phone or tablet. And then some of the other, really the smarter controllers will automatically do some of that. And there's some good options out there as well where it's kind of reading some information either off of a local rain gauge, like off of your house, or a rain gauge that's within a few miles of your house. And so if we get a bunch of rain, then some controllers will automatically sense that and be like, oh, we don't need to water today because we got all this water in the rain gauge. And then I'll also look at some of the different evaporation rates and some things like that to actually dial in the amount of water that it's putting onto your yard. So smart controllers have come a long way. It really depends on how tech savvy you are, how much you want to invest. But you can definitely do some of that research online and decide if that's something that you want to move into. But at the very minimum, what we recommend for our clients is at least a smart control, a smart Wi-Fi controller, to where you can control that those zones from your phone.
Yeah, and when it comes to watering, we know eventually we're going to have to shut off this system. We're going to have to blow out those sprinkler heads. When do you normally suggest making sure that your system is dried out and ready to go?
It's the million-dollar question here in Colorado Springs, because that first freeze could happen anywhere from September 20th to November the 20th. So it's always a guess in terms of when should I drain my irrigation. And so a couple things to kind of talk about here. Anytime it gets below 32 degrees, you want to perform a quick drain on your system. Now, that's not the same as blowing out your irrigation system. So you want to perform the quick drain, which is going to drain the outside backflow, the copper components going down into your valve box, and then your valves out. And that takes about 5 minutes. There's videos out there that are helpful with performing a quick drain, but that's going to be really, really important to any time it gets below 32 degrees. Just like it is in Colorado, gets below 32 degrees and then it gets warm again, then you can actually turn your system back on and continue to water and just be performing that quick drain when it is getting below that freezing mark. Now, when it comes to actually blowing out your sprinklers, we recommend doing that sometime in the month of October is a great time. Some people like to say, you know, by Halloween to get those blown out, something like that generally works pretty well. You really just want to get your system blown out before we get a really deep hard freeze, which we typically won't get until we get into November. And by hard freeze, what I mean is, you know, down below 20, 15 degrees for an extended period of time. Because your pipes that are in the ground actually helps insulate those pipes. And so you're not going to freeze anything in the ground until we get an extended period of cold weather, which again, we're not generally going to see in October. Come November, we may get that cold, that first big cold snap where it's going to kind of get down to that 15 degree mark. And maybe it sits there for a day or two and we only get up into the 30s and then down back into the 20s, something like that. So always perform that quick drain and then definitely get that irrigation blowout set up for sometime in October.
Absolutely. But even if we have the system shut down, even if we have the sprinklers blown out, that doesn't mean it's time to completely stop watering our lawns, right?
Correct. So winter watering is going to be important. So once you shut down your system, everything's going to go dormant, and that's okay because it's going to be the time of year where everything can go dormant. But you definitely want to continue to think about winter watering. And so winter watering, we want to perform every 3 to 4 weeks. You're going to do that just with a hose and a sprinkler and a hose and a nozzle from, you know, your garage is going to be a great place to keep that hose so it doesn't freeze up. And we recommend doing that, like I said, every 3 to 4 weeks, and you want to water your entire landscape. So you want to water your grass, your trees, your shrubs, your perennials. On your trees, for example, I like to recommend just take the hose out there, turn it on fairly low, and leave it on for an hour. Go back inside, set a timer for an hour, and then just move that hose around to each tree for about an hour. So it could take most of the day to perform this winter watering. So pick a day where it's going to be a little bit warmer. We get lots of nice days that are above 40 degrees here in Colorado Springs throughout the winter months. So really those winter months are going to be November, December, January, February, March. So you've got about 5 months in there, and it's really important to water at least one time per month. Find a 40 degree plus a day and go ahead and do that winter watering on your landscape.
Yeah, and when it comes to kind of maybe making sure your grass is ready for that winter time and that dormancy, what length should we keep it at? Do we need to keep it maybe a little bit lower, or should we let it kind of shag up a little bit?
Yeah, what I like to recommend is for the final cut of the year, I set my mower one notch lower. So if you're cutting at 3 inches, maybe you cut it at 3 inches. Or if you're cutting at 3.5 inches, maybe you cut it at 3 inches. Something like that, one notch lower. What that's going to do is that's going to help suck up some of that dead thatch that we were talking about earlier, and it's going to give you a nice clean look as we move into the fall time. And you typically want to do that on your final mowing, your final cut of the year, which most of us, I think, perform probably sometime in November as those leaves and stuff blow onto your yard. That'll also help suck up some of that debris from your yard and kind of get it ready going into the winter months.
Absolutely. Well, we're joined here with Ben Fisk of Fisk Lawnscapes. We're talking all things landscaping, getting ready for the fall and winter months right here on Money Matters. We have to take a short break. We have much more to talk about when it comes to making sure that your home, your landscape is ready for the next season. Still ahead right here on Money Matters.
Are you worried about what's been going on in the markets and how it has affected your portfolio? Maybe you need a financial checkup. If you have questions about the health of your financial future, call FRS Financial Group at 719-500-8700 to schedule your complimentary checkup. And remember to tune into CareDO on Saturdays at 9 a.m. and Sundays at 10 a.m. to catch Money Matters, presented by FRS Financial Group. Products and services offered through LPL Financial, member FINRA, SIPC.
Welcome back to Money Matters, presented by FRS Financial Group. Andrew Rogers here. Rick Stevens is out today, joined by Ben Fisk of Fisk Lawnscapes. We've been talking about the best times to make sure that your lawn is ready to go for the fall and winter months. And when it comes to that, how late in the season can we be doing some of these projects and kind of working out on our landscape and make sure everything's, you know, aesthetically looking good, but maybe ready for the next year?
Absolutely. Yeah, we do projects as much as we can throughout the whole year. And so really in terms of performing, landscaping projects, if people have, larger landscaping projects, there are opportunities to kind of do those throughout the fall and winter months. Certainly weather plays a factor into us being able to complete some of those things. But it's not a bad time of year at all to do some of those landscaping projects like we were talking about a little bit ago. So perhaps, you are looking at redoing your front and backyard and you're hiring a contractor. You can really do some of those things up through about Christmas time, depending on, again, on the specific season and if the ground is freezing. Once the ground freezes really hard, it gets a little bit harder to do some things. But it's, a good opportunity, again, to do some of that, fall planting and different things. Or maybe, this fall, you really just want to plan your landscape project for the spring. We have a lot of clients who are already starting to book projects with us for next spring. And what that allows them to do is kind of to get a plan, a design put together with us, an estimate put together with us, and then they can save up for it as we go throughout the next several months. And then they're kind of first up once we get to spring of next year. And as this is a money show, I think it's always important to talk about, hey, what do landscapes cost and how do we budget for them and how do we plan for them? And I think it's always really important for clients to realize that landscaping costs a lot of money. And so, saving some each month can help you save enough to, when we get to next spring, to have the funds available to do that project that you've wanted to do. And so kind of looking at those things of, hey, what's your time frame of this project, Andrew, and what's your budget? Those are common questions that we always interact with our clients kind of on that initial consult of, hey, what's your time frame? What's your budget looking like? And then we can kind of discuss those things. And then it helps, you as the client be able to plan for those things over the next 6 or 7 months.
Yeah. And when it comes to that planning and budgeting for getting the lawn work done, is it something that, like everything else, you get what you pay for?
Absolutely. It is. Some people, you can sometimes go down to Home Depot and buy something cheaper, but you definitely get what you pay for. And people are like, hey, how much does landscaping cost? And that's a common question that we get, but there's such a huge variety of answers to that. It's a tough question to answer. But one way that you can kind of maybe get a ballpark is look at your home value, and then take 5 to 10% of your home value. And that might be roughly what it's going to cost to hire a contractor to come out and redo your landscape or landscape your yard.
So when we're talking about that, a lot of people, you just kind of have that view of, hey, it's just throwing down some dirt, rolling sod, wash your hands, call it a day. But when you talk about hiring a professional landscape, hiring a company like Fisk Lawnscapes, what goes into some of those costs that people may not be aware of?
Absolutely. So, when you're hiring a professional, you often have to think about, these are professionals who have spent a lot of time doing this. There's training, there's certifications, there's the right equipment. There's getting it done in a timely fashion. So some of the things that we like to interact a little bit with clients about is when you're hiring a landscape professional, definitely check some qualifications. Are they a member of the Better Business Bureau? Are they a member of any trade associations? For example, I sit on the board for Associated Landscape Contractors of Colorado, which is our state-run landscaping association. and throughout the entire state of Colorado. And so we're members of ALCC, again, Associated Landscape Contractors of Colorado. And so, you know, you can actually go to their website, for example, and you can type in find a landscape pro. And what will pop up, you can put in your kind of your zip code, the type of project that you're looking for, and it'll come up with member companies who are a part of our state landscaping association. So looking at some of those qualifications of, hey, who are you, you know, members of, and, you know, do you have a good reputation in town, I think are really important things when you're selecting a contractor, because, you know, we've all heard stories of contractor nightmare stories. And, you know, when you're selecting that contractor, that landscaping contractor, you want to ask good questions. And on that initial consult, do you like your estimator designer? Because you're going to be working with that estimator designer throughout the duration of the project. If you get along great with him, fantastic. If you don't, maybe that's a sign to keep looking at some other contractors. And so, and then, you know, be ready to discuss what your time frame is. If you're like, hey, I need this project done in 2 weeks, that's not going to work for a lot of contractors. But if you're like, hey, I need this project done in 6 months, that's going to be something that a lot of these professional landscaping companies are going to be able to work with in terms of your time frame. And then also, some people are always hesitant to talk about their budget, but that does really help our landscape estimators and designers as we look at designing your project. For example, we could come into your house, Andrew, and we could design a project for $20,000, or we could design a project for $75,000. And really just depends on what your budget is and what you're looking to have in your backyard. And so if we don't know whether you want to spend 20 or whether you want to spend 75, it's really hard to come up with a design, because we might design a $75,000 project and then you come back and you say, oh, actually, I only have $20,000 to spend, and we could have worked with that $20,000 number to begin with.
Yeah, so it's better to kind of have that up front instead of shooting for the moon and then trying to scale back, because you also have that emotion in it, because you're going to be spending a lot of time in that backyard, a lot of time, you know, kind of looking at it, and you want to have something you like.
Absolutely. That's the first step of the design process. We like to tell people, walk out into your backyard or walk into the front yard and dream. Dream, what do you want this space to look like? Think about some questions like, what am I going to use this space for? Do I like to entertain people? Do I have dogs? Do I have 6 kids? Do I have the need for a big grass area? Do I really enjoy gardening? Do I love flowers? Do I need to screen a view from a neighbor that I don't like, or from a window that just is protruding into my backyard? Or perhaps I don't want to screen my really nice view of Pikes Peak. So there's a lot of questions. So we just recommend to our clients just walk out into the space, walk around, think about some of these things, and imagine what the space could look like. Dream what the space could look like. And as you're starting to kind of formulate some of those ideas, that's a great time to get a landscape professional out there like us to come and have that design consult with you.
Absolutely. And if anyone wants to get that information, let's get the phone number out, you know, even earlier so people can write it down, maybe get that planning going.
Sure. Absolutely. Yeah. You're always welcome to reach out to our office at 719-495-6300. Again, 719-495-6300. Or the website is a great place to check out as well, which is fisklawnscapes.com. Again, fisklawnscapes.com. And you can actually put in a request for a free estimate right there on the website.
Absolutely. Joined by Ben Fisk of Fisk Lawnscapes. You know, we've been talking a lot about landscaping, those projects, that scheduling as well. And we talked about, you know, the watering, maybe even the mowing side, but there's some maintenance to do when it comes to your trees and shrubs as well that I think people maybe don't realize until it's too late. So what is the best time to be looking at some of those pruning efforts or making sure your trees are taken care of properly?
Absolutely. Well, it depends on the type of tree and shrub. So let's just talk about a couple of things. General rule of thumb, it's a good time to prune after the shrub is done blooming. And so if your shrub is actively blooming, that's a bad time to prune. So fall time is a really good opportunity for a lot of shrubs and plants out there, your perennials. So on your perennials, you want to deadhead those. And so by deadheading, you're just cutting off the growth after they're done blooming. They kind of have the dead, ugly stalks. Go ahead and cut those off. Ornamental grasses, you want to cut those off sometime between November and February. And then your trees, we'll start kind of with the evergreen side of things. the best time to be looking at trimming your evergreens is going to be in the off season, so in when it's cooler. And the reason that we recommend doing that when it's cooler is that there's a lot less chance for your for bugs to move around when we're in that freezing or close to freezing temperature. And so be looking at some of those things more in those winter months is going to be a great time to prune those evergreen trees.
Yeah, and you know, we also talked about some other projects. You know, I know you've told me in the past too that when it comes to concrete, you can never really have too much in most cases. That a lot of people might think, you know, I wish I would have gone bigger. I wish I would have had more. So if you're thinking, you know, this fall, winter might be the time to expand a patio, maybe add a little bit more of a concrete walkway. What's some of the things we should keep in mind with that?
Yeah, you know, it's a common question. People are like, how big should my back patio be? And I always tell them, hey, if you're kind of trying to determine between a smaller patio or a bigger patio, go with a bigger patio, because I've never heard that somebody says, oh, my patio is too big, Ben. So patio space is often, you know, really nice for entertaining guests, even just for your family, you know, sitting out there on some of these nice September evenings that we have. You could get a little fire pit. It's a heater. There's a lot of things that you can do on your back patio here in Colorado. And so we definitely love those ideas of back patios. So in terms of kind of when do you do this patio or this sidewalk, you know, we can pour almost year round. Biggest thing that we have to watch out for from a weather perspective is the overnight freezing temperatures. And so we need a couple of days where the overnight temp is not going to get below freezing in order to do that concrete pour. So we still have a lot of really nice concrete pouring weather, as we like to say, here in the fall. And then even throughout the winter, you know, we get some of those stretches, Andrew, that are 50, 60 degrees. And overnight, it might only drop to 40 or 38. Some of those are great opportunities to pour your project as well. So maybe you're looking at just a back patio or a sidewalk or something like that. You know, that's still some projects that you can look at completing over the winter months.
Yeah, and how common is it to have that be one of those projects that you add on and to expand into an existing landscape?
Yeah, and so oftentimes, you know, people love adding that patio. They realize once they've moved into their home, let's say it's a new build and they have the little builder-provided 8x8 little square that they have, they realize within a few months or within a few days that that is far too small for them. And so it's definitely one of those things that people look at upgrading often. And so they say, hey, we like what the builder did, but we need more space. And so we're going to take this 8x8, we're going to pop it out, and we're going to instead do a 20x30 patio, for an example.
Yeah. And then when it comes to the cost, I know when earlier we talked about that budgeting. What should people be thinking of when it comes to maybe a rough estimate to adding in that concrete?
Yeah, so concrete, you know, generally you can spend, boy, anywhere kind of in that $5,000 to $30,000 range, just to kind of give you a range. I know that's a large range, but depending on kind of what you're looking at doing, you have a lot of options within concrete as well, whether it's just kind of a gray concrete, which is kind of your typical concrete that you would see made out of most of your driveways. That's just a gray brushed concrete, gray broomed concrete. And then kind of up from there, you can add some color to it. And then you have your stamped concrete. And so kind of depending on what look you're going for, that stamped concrete is going to be more decorative. It's going to have you know, a base color, and then it's going to have some other accent colors on there. It's going to have either a texture or a stamp. It can look like flagstone or like ashlar, or just a really nice texture or like an old granite type style. A lot of cool options that you can do with concrete. And so I know that's a wide range, but again, it kind of depends on what you're looking for and what the other elements of your backyard are in terms of what you're looking for.
And is that another thing too that, you know, you maybe start talking with a company like yourself now, and is that something that you're still looking, you know, months and months out, or could that be a quicker turn depending on just kind of your daily schedule?
Right. Yeah. It kind of depends on the specific project. You know, we typically are booking anywhere from about 2 to 3 months out. Sometimes if it's just a concrete pour, we can sneak that in a little bit sooner. But, you know, most of your landscape professionals, there's just a lot of work and a lot of folks who are looking for things. And so for the most part, we're kind of in that 2 to 3 month window of time in terms of how long will it take us to get out and actually complete your project.
Absolutely. We have one more break we need to get to. We're continuing our conversation with Ben Fisk of Fisk Lawnscapes about your backyard. It is a major investment, making sure that you're putting that investment into the proper places and also maintaining that investment well as we're nearing the fall and winter months. We have one more break here on Money Matters. We'll be right back.
Does stock market volatility have you wondering which way is up? Do the talking heads and doomsayers have you wondering if this really is the end? If you want straight answers from an advisor who isn't just trying to sell you something, call FRS Financial Group at 719-500-8700 to schedule your complimentary appointment today. And don't forget to tune into Money Matters presented by FRS Financial Group Saturday mornings at 9 and Sunday mornings at 10 right here on KRDO. Products and services offered through LPL Financial, member FINRA, SIPC.
Welcome back to Money Matters presented by FRS Financial Group. I'm Andrew Rogers. Rick Stevens is out today, joined by Ben Fisk of Fisk Lawnscapes. We've been talking a lot about landscaping over this show today. And Ben, when it comes to the topic of lawns, the topic of landscaping, what are some of the biggest misconceptions that you hear as you're out working with clients?
Yeah, you know, we touched on artificial turf earlier, and so kind of wanted to go back and mention artificial turf is one of those things that a lot of people have in their heads of, hey, it's just nasty old green carpet, and that's going to be in my yard, and it's going to look terrible. Artificial turf has come a long way in the last period of years. And so, you know, one of those things that you can incorporate into your yard, especially as we talk about water and as we look at the water landscape over the next 5 or 10 years, we are going to need to be watering our landscapes less and less. You know, we hear about these things on the news with the Colorado River Basin and kind of all of the water shortages across the West. That will impact us here in Colorado. And so we need to be prepared. As Colorado Springs Utilities says, hey, you can water less than you could last year. And I think some of those things could be coming. And so, you know, things like artificial turf, you still get that green in your backyard. You still get an area for your kids to kick a soccer ball around or throw the football around. And it looks so much better than it has in years past. It's probably one of the biggest trends that we're seeing right now, Andrew, in the landscaping industry, is more and more people are using artificial turf. And so, again, as we kind of look at, you know, down the road, what are some things that we're seeing or some recommendations? Artificial turf, I think, is going to be here for the long term.
And how does the modern artificial turf kind of, what does that look like? What's the process? Because I know when I even hear that, I still think of, oh, they're just going to put some of that, you know, green outdoor carpet over concrete, and you know, there you go. So walk me through the process of what modern artificial turf actually is and how that gets put together.
Sure, absolutely. So the first thing is going to be to have a really solid base for us to put that artificial turf on. And so we're going to bring in, again, let's just picture a backyard that's maybe 600, 800 square feet, something like that. We're going to bring in a bunch of road base, and we're going to compact that. So think of like a crushed concrete type deal, and that gets compacted to give us a really nice, solid, stable base, because what we don't want is something underneath there that's going to, you know, wash out over time, or it's going to, you know, be kind of settling differently. And so we're going to get that base in, and then we're going to go ahead and lay that artificial turf out. And there's going to be different lengths of the artificial turf. And so, you know, you might be familiar with artificial turf, say, on a sports field. You know, maybe you play out at the Pride Soccer Complex, or you've been down to the Switchbacks game. Those are artificial turf surfaces, and those are specifically designed for sports turf. But they have some that are a little bit longer blade. So if you like something that's going to be not quite so shiny and a little bit more of that dark green color, you can go with something that's going to have a slightly longer blade on it. And then there's going to be some different options at that point in terms of which color, with the thickness, all of those kind of things that you need to pick. Then we're going to go ahead and install that. And that gets tacked down all the way around, so it gets stretched real tight, kind of similar to carpet, as much as I don't like comparing it to carpet. There is that element where it does get stretched tight. And then after that, we're going to rake in some sand or some rubber. And that's going to really help those blades of grass stand up and look really authentic and look really, really real.
And that's where you get that great slow-mo shot. Maybe your kids trying to play football, and you get that nice little toe drag that you see on Sunday. You can replicate that in your own backyard.
Exactly. You could replicate that and, you know, have a really nice field, honestly, that you can play on year round. You don't have to worry about all that stuff we were talking about earlier. Artificial turf, really all you have to do from time to time from a maintenance perspective, blow it off, get the leaves off of it, maybe hose it off, especially if it gets dirty or if you have dogs that are peeing on it, hose it off from time to time. That's about it, you know, in comparison with your regular sod, which, you know, is really nice still, but you have to aerate it, fertilize it, water it, have an irrigation system, do all the things that we were talking about, you know, spray for weeds, pick weeds, all that kind of stuff. And so artificial turf, while it might be a lot more to install on the front end from a cost perspective, you're going to have a lot cheaper, a lot more inexpensive, yearly annual cost on that. And it's going to last for 15, 20 years.
Yeah. And, when we talk about that initial cost difference, having that, adjustment with a higher upfront cost but lower maintenance cost, what are we talking about the difference between artificial versus your traditional turf?
Sure. Yeah. So, again, it's going to depend on each installation, but we definitely see like the cost might be, three times more than sod, for an example. However, when you sit there and do the math, and we encourage clients, hey, you can do an ROI on this. What's that return on investment on my artificial turf? Most of the time, that figures out somewhere in that 4 to 6, 7 year time frame in terms of the return on investment. By the time you figure, the cost of water is also going up. And so, if you're having to water your regular sod out there, that's another part of that calculation that you definitely have to figure, not just the costs of your mowing and your fertilizing, your aerating, and all those things on regular sod.
Yeah, and when it comes to the feel of it, you mentioned, the kids can still play on it, things like that. Is it feel like, especially you say you've got maybe kids tackling each other or falling down, is it going to be similar to what you would experience on the regular turf, or is it going to be a little bit harder, something to kind of keep in mind?
Yeah, so it's going to still, give you a little bit of that cushion because you have some of that sand or rubber, so it definitely has some of that cushion. It's not going to feel the same as real grass. I still personally, I love real grass because it is, you mow it and it's just that really cool, lush green. Mm-hmm. Feels really, really nice, to sit or lay on. But honestly, your artificial turf, you can still sit and lay on. It's going to be hotter, so that's something to keep in mind. And you might get some of kind of those burns, like a rug burn type deal, if you go down really hard on it. But we do it all the time for kids to play on, dogs to play on, and really no concerns there at all from a safety perspective. And obviously they use it on sports fields all over the place as well.
Now, can you get it installed and laid out with those nice, perfect, crisp lines that everyone's kind of going for, that kind of goal for your lawn maintenance? Can you get that kind of replicated?
There's some things that we can do to get some of those lines and some little tips of the trade that we can do for you.
Absolutely. We're talking about all things lawns, landscaping. We know the winter months is coming. So, Ben, what other things should we be doing outside of the house to prepare for old man winter's eventual arrival?
Yeah, so we already talked about winter watering, but definitely want to remind everybody to winter water. That's one of the best things that you can do throughout the winter months to help your yard come back really strong in the spring. I can tell you from experience that if you don't water, especially your new shrubs, your new trees, you're going to have some things that winter kill. Same with your grass. So really, really important, just like to stress watering, when it's 40 degrees or above, and watering everything in your landscape for that winter watering. Something else that you can do that really helps is to take some of your mulch and go ahead and remulch. So let's say you have a gorilla hair mulch or a cedar mulch. Get a little bit extra of that and actually mulch up around the base of all your plants. You want to make sure that it's nice and thick. You want to make sure that you're kind of, collaring around a lot of those plants. And what that's going to do is it's going to actually help insulate or protect those plants from some of those really bitter cold winds that we have, some of the really cold temperatures that we have. And so you can definitely look at remulching. It's also a good time to do any corrective pruning. We talked about pruning a few minutes ago, but you may have a branch or two that is, maybe it broke from a windstorm in the summer. Maybe you have that branch on your evergreen tree that has snapped off. Definitely do all that. All of that corrective pruning is going to be really important to take care of as we head kind of into those winter months.
Yeah, and when it comes to the winter months, we know another big thing that a lot of the lawn care companies, a lot of landscapers also look at is snow removal. What are some of the things that we should be maybe thinking of now or making sure that we're doing correctly when it comes to maybe snow removal at our own house?
Sure, absolutely. So we handle commercial snow removal, but we don't handle any residential snow removal. And so as you're looking at some of that snow removal, you can get your snowblower tuned up. If you haven't used it all summer long, then you probably want to pull that out, put fresh gas in it, maybe a fresh spark plug, or maybe take it into a shop to get it tuned up. And then make sure you have, your shovels and ice melt ready to to go, and that you're ready for that first snow of the year. And also, if you are looking for somebody to perform snow removal at your house, you want to hire a contractor to do that, now's the time to start calling around and find somebody, because a lot of these companies, they only have the bandwidth, the capacity for a certain number of clients. And so, you know, if you wait until the first snow and then you call somebody, you're gonna have a really hard time finding somebody. And so now's a great time if you're like, you know what, I hate shoveling snow, I want to hire somebody to do that. Definitely get on the phone while it's, you know, nice and hot, and get somebody lined up to take care of that for you.
Yeah, and when it comes to maybe taking care of that snow or that ice, I know there's always talk about, do you use salt? Do you not? Is it good, bad for the concrete, things like that? What, weigh in on that for me.
Absolutely. So we always recommend, sometimes you have to use ice melt just to remove ice. The trick is, don't overapply it. So just like fertilizer, you want to apply the right amount of it and then get it off of your sidewalk as quickly as you can after the storm passes. So you put the ice melt down, it does its thing, the sun comes out, and honestly, by the afternoon, your sidewalk is dry. You have some of that residual ice melt, take your blower, blow it off, or sweep it up into a pile, throw it away. It'll take you an extra 5 or 10 minutes, but that'll protect the environment, that'll protect your concrete, and that's kind of my take on the ice melt debate.
Absolutely. You know, a couple times we've talked, there's been this ongoing kind of need for people and kind of getting enough people out there. I know when those snows come, you're going to need a lot more people behind the wheels of trucks getting those plows down. How is it looking when it comes to the labor force, not just for Fisk, but for the landscaping market in general here?
Absolutely. Yeah, you know, we've seen a trend over the last 2 years of the labor market being really, really short, especially in the landscaping industry. And with, you know, low unemployment and some of those things, we are still hiring as a company. And I know a lot of landscaping companies are. And we've seen this in other industries as well. And so this is why some of the companies out there can only handle so much snow removal. This is why, you know, we're booking 2, 3, 4 months out, just because that labor pool is a little bit tough right now. And, you know, we really believe in bringing on awesome team members onto our team. And so, you know, when we send a crew out to your house, we want to make sure that these are guys who are well trained, who are certified, who know what they're doing. And so that's important, that we're sending out high quality people to your home.
Well, of course. You mean they're driving trucks with your name on it, so they've got to be a good representation of you. So what are you looking for when it comes to those awesome team members? Do they have to have a lot of landscaping experience or maybe even degrees in horticulture?
Yeah, you know, we are willing to train folks straight from the ground up. So we don't necessarily need to hire somebody who already has experience in the landscaping industry. Certainly, if you have experience, that is a plus. If you have a degree, that is a plus. If you have some other certifications, that is a plus. But we're willing to do training, and we do quite a bit of training throughout the year. And then we're also just looking for people with really high character, Andrew. We're looking for people who are humble, hungry, and smart. And, you know, I always like to mention those three things throughout our interview process. That's really the type of people that we're looking for, people who are humble, people who are hungry, and people who are smart.
Absolutely. And again, that phone number, if people want to get more information, maybe they're hearing this thinking that they want to get out of the corporate rat race, kind of the idea of sitting in an office is starting to get more and more miserable, and just want to have a great job working with great people outside most of the time.
Absolutely. Yeah, you get to be outside a whole bunch. You get to work with some great people. And yeah, you're always welcome to reach out to us for more information about that at 719-495-6300. Again, 719-495-6300. Or look us up online at fisklawnscapes.com. F-I-S-K, lawnscapes.com. And Andrew, thanks for having me on.
Ben, we appreciate the time as always. Thank you for joining us. That does it here for another edition of Money Matters, presented by FRS Financial Group. I'm Andrew Rogers. Rick Stevens is out today, but if you've got questions, if you've got anything on your mind, feel free to give Rick a call, 719-500-8700. You can also shoot him an email at rstevens@frsfinancialgroup.com, or you can head on over to frsfinancialgroup.com. Click on the Contact Us button on the top corner. Get those questions in, because your money matters. That does it for this edition of Money Matters. We'll talk again next week.